This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Have you ever stopped to wonder what exactly success means to you? Is it money, fame, power, all of the above, or none at all? I'm Darshan Johan, and this is Redefining Success, a show where we speak to passionate people from various fields about their lives, what makes them tick, and what the word success means to them. Joining me on the show today is Dominic Lucien Look. He's the co-founder of Monday Show School, a musical theatre school. Welcome to the show, Dominic. Let's start with the big question I ask every guest. How do you define success?
Thank you so much for having me. Nice to be here. How do I define success? I think for me, I guess it would be quite a simple answer though. I would just define success in a way where I don't need to make excuses for what I do. Right. So I don't need to do something and say, never mind, I'm just doing it for the money, or never mind, I'm doing it because this person wants me to do it. For me, I think I would say I've reached success if I do something because I really want to do it, and I don't have to create an excuse to force myself to do that thing. A lot of what I do, which is, you know, like teaching and, you know, being in performing arts, it involves me being with people, mixing with people, working with people. So I would say that, I just need to always be focused on what I feel helps me to do well in my life, to be happy. But at the same time, also to make sure that people around me feel the energy, the positivity from me at the same time. I don't want to be that person where, you know, I walk into a room and people are like, oh, it's him again. You know, I want to be that person where, you know, I want to create that positivity, that energy, that enthusiasm and motivation. So, you know, that mindset kind of helps me survive. It's my survival mode, you know, thinking that, yes, what I do affects me. It makes me happy, but it also affects other people and the people around me.
That's interesting. So you are in the performing arts scene. You're a performer yourself. You're a teacher. Now, before I get to the teaching aspect of it, because that is huge. It's a whole different ballgame than just performing, right? When do you remember the points in your life where first you fell in love with the craft of musical theatre, of performing, of being on stage? And the secondly, do you remember the point where you told yourself or you figured out that, you know, I could perhaps make this into a career?
I sort of remember. I mean, they cover like many eras of my past. But I think growing up, I was always interested in performing. I loved watching performances. I grew up watching lots of movies, lots of musical movies. So I would usually tell my students that, you know, whenever I was sick at home, my mom would make me watch The Sound of Music, The King and I, My Fair Lady, all these classic movies over and over and over again. And so that was my exposure when I was young. So I think I always grew up surrounded by these kind of things. And I think I was kind of influenced by the people that I saw, like the teachers that taught me music, that taught me performing in school. I think I always told myself, wow, I like the way they do things. I like the way they teach. I like the way they talk. I like how they're so patient and compassionate. And, you know, I just always told myself, so nice to be these people. So happy. And so, you know, they look like they have a good life. So I think growing up, I like, oh, this must be the best job in the world.
Right. So did you, like, were your parents also very, because you said your mom showed you like The Sound of Music and all these like iconic musical films and so on and so forth. Were your parents also very much like into the arts, into, it could be film, it could be Broadway, it could be musicals? Did you grow up in that sort of family?
Actually, I didn't. And funnily, I'm the only one in my family that's, you know, artistic in that sense. But I would say maybe the exposure came with these movies, and also, you know, like every few weekends we'd go to the shop to buy those cassettes or CDs, you know, at that time to listen to music. And my parents would always buy all sorts of music, reggae, folk, country, you know, and I'd have to listen to all these things at home. So I think I kind of got exposed in that way, but it's not like they were invested in, you know, making sure I was artistically inclined or anything. It was just a by the way kind of thing.
But at what point did you think that I want to be a performer? Like this is it? Because especially, I'm very curious. Were you allowed to think that, like in your family? Were you given the space to think, you know what, like if you want to go and be someone who, you know, performs on stage and you want that to be your career, you want that to be the path that you tread, go for it. You know, is this something that you had to, you know, convince yourself? Did you have a lot of like internal struggles, or is this something that you knew since young, like, this is what I want to do. I don't care what anybody says. I'm going to pursue it. I don't know whether it's going to be successful or not successful, whether I'm going to be able to survive on this or not. I'm just going to go for it.
Wow. Well, I think at that age, I was definitely not thinking about whether I would make a career out of it or whether, right, I would be able to make myself financially stable out of this career. I think that was too far away from me. But I remember going to watch a show. And I grew up in Sabah, in Kota Kinabalu. So we didn't really get much, you know, exposure, like live performances. But I remember once when we were watching Astro, and then they were advertising that Cats the Musical is coming to KL, to Istana Budaya. And that was the first time where I asked my parents, like, could we maybe go for holiday so that I can watch this musical? And I was expecting no, because, you know, it's expensive to fly everyone to KL and it's expensive to buy tickets. But my father said, sure, why don't you and your mom just go since you really want to? And I was very surprised. So I went there, I watched it, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is really something I want to do. I want to be on stage. In fact, I remember thinking to myself, I don't just want to be on stage. I want to be the person that puts all this together. I want to be the person who can, you know, decide what people see on stage. So that kind of started it. And I remember also reading the program book, and I saw information about the performers, and they were saying, like, they studied here, they have a degree in performing arts, they have a degree in music, they have a degree in acting. And I thought, that was the first time I told myself, I didn't know you could go to university and study this. And then immediately I told my parents, okay, just for your information, I'm going to university and I'm going to study performing arts. And they were like, okay, sure. So okay. I was about 14, I think I was 14, and that's when I created this list, pros and cons of different universities where I could go to study performing arts. And I presented it to them and told them, okay, these are the places I want to go and study when I'm, you know, when I'm done with secondary school. So it all started from there. No hesitation, no one stopping me. It felt like a natural progression for me.
So now you go to university, you study performing arts and all of these things, right? When did the teaching aspect come into the thing?
You know, I grew up playing teacher at home. Like when I had friends coming over, I would play, let's play teacher, and I'll be the teacher and you be the students. It felt so natural, and I knew that I wanted to be, I knew I wanted to study performing arts in university for the sake of being able to teach it.
Right.
So my direction was quite clear from the start. I wanted to be a teacher very early on. So I kind of paved my path and studied subjects and took courses to help me be a better teacher after that.
Ah, so why teaching then? Why does it mean so much to you?
Huh, I really don't know. That's a good question, and I really don't have an answer to it. I just enjoy it. I feel like it's a natural thing for me. I like performing, but if you give me a choice to teach or perform, I would choose to teach, because that's the thing that's where my comfort zone is, and that's what I really love doing. And I've always loved sharing things, explaining things. I like working with people. So I guess it all falls into what teachers naturally have to do.
And speaking of what teachers naturally have to do, there are different kinds of teachers. There are great teachers, there are not so good teachers. There are great, among the great teachers, there are different approaches to teaching. What, to you, what are the key qualities you think you need to be a good teacher? What is your philosophy of teaching?
My philosophy of teaching is I don't see it as teaching. I focus on learning. So I sometimes find the word teaching a bit like, that's not quite what I like. I think I like to focus on the word learning, because the students learn and I learn at the same time. And I don't like to feel like I'm teaching you and you are just learning from me. So my philosophy is very like, collaborative. I'm here to learn with you. I know things that you don't know, but you also know things that I don't know. And this is the time when we get to share. And my philosophy extends even to children as young as 4, 3, you know, all the way up to adults, where I feel like I think there are things that I can learn from anybody and any age, and, you know, vice versa. So I guess my philosophy is just really based on learning and not focusing on the teaching part of it.
That's interesting you mentioned that. So what, you know, you've been teaching for quite some time now. What would you say are some of the most important lessons you've learned from your students?
I've recently learned, especially never to underestimate students. You know, sometimes I would think like, this is probably too difficult, or no, I can't make them do this. I don't think they'll understand. I've always been proven wrong. They can do it. They can understand it. They just need to have the time and the, you know, the understanding. But I used to underestimate students, and really I learned that people are actually more powerful than I think they are, which was a great lesson for me to learn.
Yeah. Now, you know, when we talk about musical theatre, when you call it anything related to the arts scene, right? People tend to only look at the glamorous side of things. Wow, your job is so cool. And there's no denying, right? It is certainly, you know, something that not many people are perhaps blessed or lucky enough to be able to do. But it's not just all glitz and glamour, fun and games and you know, things like that, right? So with that in mind, tell me about your journey, or the process from taking your first step into the working world to starting your own performing arts school. What was that journey like?
Oh, well, it was a bumpy ride. So, you know, like you said, a lot of people think of performing arts, you know, glitz and glamour, but that's the thing that we put on stage for you to see. But beneath all that, there's a lot of hard work. And I think people who do performing arts have to be really patient with what they do, because the results come much later on. So for me personally, my journey was, you know, stepping to the working world, having more education in performing arts. I kind of did not know the business part of anything. So when I started and I co-founded this school with Benjamin Lin, who's the other partner who co-founded with me, both of us, and especially myself, had no business knowledge, or insufficient, I would say not no knowledge, but just insufficient knowledge to actually start a company properly. We had to learn along the way. And I would say one of the things that a lot of performers would agree with me is that we need to know more about business. We need to know how things run from, you know, the numbers and the figures. We are very weak at that. So I had to learn the hard way. I had to learn marketing. I had to learn advertising. I had to learn accounting, you know, managing the business side of a company. It's exciting, but creative people naturally don't get attracted to these things.
Right.
I would say I'm so much better off today. It's been 10 years since we've had Monday Show. And I would say I'm more comfortable now with the business part of it, but it is difficult. The other difficult thing is, you know, in performing arts, and I guess it's like this everywhere else, but there's a lot of dramatic people, myself included. We're all emotional. We all protect our own art. We want things to be done our way. So, mm-hmm. you know, dealing with people is another huge challenge, but I would say it's all part of the happy part of the journey that I have to go through.
Tell me, what was it like? And what were you doing prior to that? And, you know, when did that conversation come about? You know, you and your co-founder, Benjamin, when did y'all start having the conversation, and why? You know, like, it's not just about teaching, because you could have joined other performing arts centers and so on and so forth, but y'all wanted to start something of your own. Yeah. How did that conversation start coming about?
Well, it started when we were performers ourselves. You know, I was performing a lot at that time. And one thing I realized is that a lot of performers don't get training. The only training they get is if they get into a show and they have to learn as they rehearse and as they go on stage, they're still learning what is right and wrong, what is good and bad. But after that, if you don't get into another show, there's no avenue to train, to continue, you know, improving your skills. So we thought, since there's a gap there, why don't we start a training ground for people who just want to get better all the time. And also at the same time, encourage them to be performers. And then once you're done with your performance, come back and let's continue training until, well, never stop.
Right. On the show with me today is Dominic Lucien Look. He's the co-founder of Monday Show School, which is a musical theatre school. After the break, I'll be asking him if his days get grueling, because people often look at musical theatre performers, people in the art scene, and they just see the glitz and glamour side of things. But what about the hard work that goes behind it? We'll be back with more on Redefining Success, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Redefining Success, a show where we speak to passionate people from various fields about their lives, what makes them tick, and what the word success means to them. I'm Dashran Johan, and my guest on today's episode is Dominic Lucien Look. He's the co-founder of Monday Show School, which is a musical theatre school. So, Dominic, do your days get grueling? How grueling can your days get?
So like you said, I also work in an international school, right? Mm-hmm. So my day can start at 6 a.m.
Wow.
Okay, well I'm lying a bit here. The snooze ends at 6:30.
Right. Yes, I mean, tell me about it. That's what we all do. We aim for 6, but, you know, snooze 10 times and then finally maybe half an hour.
No, right?
Yeah.
But in reality, no, 6:30 is right. The last alarm that I know, okay, I have to get up no matter what. And if it's a school day, that's how my day starts. And then I go to the international school to do what I do. And then at night is Monday Show. So my weekdays are filled with the international school, Asia Pacific, in the morning to afternoon. Monday Show at night. Weekends, I'm at Monday Show, Saturday and Sunday. If I'm not teaching, then I'm just there to, you know, do the other work that needs to be done. So it's not a bad thing because I really enjoy it. I'm not complaining about the hours. I actually do love it. Sometimes I know people do remind me that I need to sleep more, but I use the school holidays for that.
Right. You know, you mentioned the international school. Do you need, is it fair to call it a day job, I guess? Do you need that to sustain this passion of yours, running Monday Show School? Do you look at it that way, or do you just look at both as your passion and you want to do both? How do you look at it?
Wow, that's a good question. Actually, both are my passions. I love doing both. Mm-hmm. Of course, the extra money helps.
Right.
And I'm glad I have, you know, that other income to help. Because honestly, in the performing arts industry, money isn't the biggest attraction for us.
Right.
We want money, but it's so hard to make money in performing arts. So having this other job does help a lot. But fortunately for me, I wake up feeling excited to start the day, you know, doing my work. I think I'm very fortunate in that sense.
What does it take to be a successful performing artist in Malaysia?
Well, you need to have a lot of patience to achieve what you want to achieve. You need to have got a lot of good networking skills because you really need to know people in order to get jobs. And I think you have to be ready to not be rich. You have to, you know, make sacrifices and tell yourself it's really not the most glamorous job in terms of finances, but you just need to really be passionate and enjoy working with people because it's always about people. Even when you're on stage, you're performing to an audience and you're doing it for them. So yeah, there's just so many aspects to being a good performer. Right. And I think number one is just really passion.
You brought up the finances aspect. Have you had to either, you know, sort of convince? I guess the people that you needed to convince the most, your parents didn't need much convincing in that sense. But, you know, when you talk to friends outside of the industry, do they buy into this philosophy where you said, you know, it's not a financially driven, money is important, but you cannot do, I'm not doing this for money. And have you, maybe even if not just with friends outside the industry or acquaintances and people, have you had to wrestle with that with yourself, sacrificing perhaps one aspect of it, which could be the money aspect, and for other forms of fulfillment, perhaps. And is it worth it? Is it not worth it? Have you had these sorts of monologues with yourself?
Oh, yes. Lately, no. But I mean, when I first started, many years, that was my internal monologue for, you know, almost on a daily basis. Like, you know, if only I had just studied like medicine or engineering, you know, and I see my friends, you know, who graduated with me and they're all enjoying their holidays and I am here collecting coins in my house just so that I can go to the petrol station and put petrol in my car using all the coins in my house. You know, like there were times when I felt, oh, why was I so silly to do this? Why couldn't I have just done something proper? But I think in the end, it's, you know, if you just persevere, you just have to be smart. I think a lot of performers are versatile in the sense that they teach as well, or they do other jobs. You can't, well, sadly, we live in a country where it's not, you know, very well supported. So we can't exactly make a steady income. So I think performers just have to be creative and find all sorts of ways to help themselves. But you're right, my monologue has always been like that for many years, struggling with this. And I had to convince, you know, people do ask these questions and I would say, yeah, they say that, oh, you're very foolish, you know, you could have, you know, done something else and get so much more money. Why do you want to do this and suffer so much? But, oh well.
Two questions I want to get to that. One of it is the suffering. Mm. Your friends and people asked you, why do you want to suffer so much? Did you feel like you were suffering?
You know, I actually didn't. Yeah. Now that you ask the question, I didn't think of it as like I was suffering in any way. I guess I always knew that one day this would change. And I just had to wait for that day. So, you know, I kind of felt like, oh, I'm like in this dramatic story where, you know, all of you go and enjoy life first, but I will suffer and one day my time will come and I will shine.
Right.
You know, it felt like that.
So I want to zoom in on that period where you talked about, because it's so interesting. You said that there was a period in your career, your life where, you know, you had to collect coins around your houses, just around your house, just to put petrol and things like that. How long was that period, and what was your day to day like, and what kept you going? Is it just telling yourself, you know, I'm the protagonist of this story, this big dramatic story, and there is going to be this big bombastic ending for myself. But, you know, realistically, what was it like, and what kept you going? You know, you see your friends, perhaps they are climbing up the ladder. You know, they start with their, they may start as interns or whatever, executives and stuff, and then, but they are climbing up the corporate ladder, and every year their salaries are getting more. You know, we all have friends, family members and whatnot where, you know, as the years go by, their cars get better, more fancy, you know, their houses get bigger and so on and so forth. You know, a lot of things, you know, they look at growth that way. But for you, what kept you going in those days where you had to collect coins to pump petrol? What made you not say, you know what, I'm done collecting coins, I'm just going to go and join corporate?
Okay. In all honesty, the thing that made me just want to keep going on is the people, the students at Monday Show, the people that I would see almost every day working towards a goal, wanting to be better performers, wanting to be better people. I don't know, it sounds like very cliche, but really that's what kept me going. You know, just thinking, I can't let these people down. I can't just let go of something that I really, really want. How can I just throw it away? And I could just kept telling myself, it's okay, it's just money, it will come one day. If I don't have it now, it's fine. I don't know. It's just, I think it's the people that I had in my life that really helped.
I think that's absolutely fantastic, man. How do you measure growth?
Wow. I never really thought of this question. I guess in some ways I would see my personal growth, or how I would measure my growth, by just not giving up. So if each day I can find something, you know, to move me to the next day, I feel like I'm growing in that sense. Just never letting go of today so that I can make sure tomorrow happens. To me, that's growth. So like in terms of Manishow School, you know, if people stay and want to continue learning, to me, that's growth, because, you know, they are learning and I'm learning and we keep growing together. So that's just my way of saying, yeah, we're growing and I am growing and I'm not giving up.
Do you still collect coins to pump petrol? Oh, have you
no,
already
I don't, asked actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm proud to say, you know, I've reached a stage where I can live a bit more comfortably than just collecting coins. But you know that you know, we never are happy, right? We always want something. So I will always look at someone who's above and like, oh, if only I could have that car, mm-hmm. right? You know, but yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah, I think that's fundamentally it, right? Like you said, you're happy. And yeah, how long did it take you to go, you know, from collecting coins phase to now where, you know, yeah, you may not have the fanciest car or whatever, but you have, you're contented, you're happy, and you know that you have reached that point already at least. Mm. How long did that process take?
Well, I would say maybe 6-7 years.
Wow.
It's a tough industry to be in to begin with. So it did take quite a while to grow in that sense. So when Ben and I started Manishow, we started so small, but we decided to let it grow naturally, which is why it took longer. We wanted to invest in the people first. So we have people who are, you know, have been with us for 10 years or, you know, 8 years, and it's a blessing to have people like that. So we have grown in that way, but it took us a while to financially feel like, okay, this is a good place to be at. Now we can focus on the next step, which is, you know, to grow even bigger.
You're a teacher. I'm very curious, what has been the proudest moment for you as a teacher?
My proudest moment, I always feel proud when I see my students on stage. You know, it's like I go through a lot of classes with them, you know, we train together, and then when I finally see them perform on stage, it's like that proud daddy moment where you see your kids grow up.
Right.
It's that kind of really proud moment, you know, as a teacher, where you see your student doing something amazing.
This is a tough industry, like you said. It's a tough industry in general. It's a tougher industry in Malaysia. It must have gotten even tougher during the pandemic. Yeah. Did the pandemic make you sort of rethink your career, or did it make you wonder if you could continue doing this? Or were you like, you know, I don't care, pandemic, apocalypse, doesn't matter, this is what I'm going to do?
Well, at first, when we first got hit by the pandemic, you know, moving our classes from physical classes to Zoom classes, and to be honest, performing arts and Zoom don't really go well together. It's, you know, it's so difficult. I think I found pleasure in the challenge of like, okay, what can we do to make students excited to be in a Zoom class, in a performing arts Zoom class? And it made me very excited every time I had to plan the classes. You know, I had to think like, okay, what can I do so that they'll be at home, but they'll be so excited to be at home joining this class. And it wasn't always, you know, as fun as I make it sound. There were days when I'm like, oh my goodness, we're still on Zoom, like, and I'm looking at their faces and they're like, looking at me, and I know we're thinking the same thing, like, when will this be over? Mm-hmm. And we're not blaming each other, but we also hope that, you know. So it did hit. Yep. It did make me question, not my career, but it made me question, like, how can I make this special, this you know, this thing that we have to go through, how do I make it exciting and special for the students?
Did a lot of students, because you hear this about like tuition centers and things like that, where, you know, once we went into the Zoom era of pandemic, like, students were just not into it. And as a result, like, parents were not seeing the results, so to speak. And so, like, parents were like, you know what, I'm just going to pull them out from tuition. Yeah. We'll figure it out. And then maybe when physical classes start again, whenever that is, then we will recalibrate. Did students from your school drop out once you all went into the Zoom era of things? Did you have to face that?
Yeah, numbers did drop. Mm-hmm. It came in waves. Sometimes it dropped a lot. Sometimes just dropped a little. New people would come in, which was really interesting because new students would join during the Zoom era. But numbers did drop. It did affect a lot of things. I could see, like, you know, when we first started, we would have, say, in a group class, we'd have like 20 students, and then a few months later or a few lockdowns later, it's like just 5 students in the class. So yes, it did affect, but...
Were those days sort of demotivating? What kept you pushing forward despite, you know, when those numbers were dropping and things like that? Did it ever demotivate you a little bit?
It did discourage me a bit. Like, you know, I'll be wondering, like, do the students actually enjoy? Are they here because they want to give me face? Are they here because they really want to? Is it really fun? Right. Class, you know, I had so many questions. I didn't dare to ask because I think I was afraid of the answers I would get.
Well, I'm glad you persevered and pushed through, and you know, Monday Show School is still thriving. I just want to end with one final question. What does it feel like doing something you love?
Ooh, it feels good. It really does. It feels, I don't have to drag my feet. I feel excited to do things. Every day is different, and I think, especially in the industry that I'm in, things keep changing, people keep changing. So it feels good to be doing something that I am passionate about. And I have no other way to describe it except it's just really, really, really good to be doing this.
On that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Dominic.
You're welcome, and thank you so much.
That was Dominic Lucien Loop. He's the co-founder of Monday Show School, which is a musical theatre school. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcast from. You just have to look up Redefining Success. I'm Dashun Johan, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.